Israel was performed under extreme mental duress and lack of prescribed medication.
You know, there's a lot more to comedy than what you hear on the stage.
I like the idea of comedy at night. Rule number one, attack the audience verbally.
You know, my friends laughed when I started doing comedy, and nobody's laughing now.
I emptied my case. They didn't boo me or anything. It's just every time I came out from behind the case, another 10 people had left. Man, I was ready to hang myself. I'm not kidding, man. I measured the light cord in the room and everything.
It's The Green Room, a program by comics, with comics, where we talk about everything. And it's starting right now. Hey, everybody. You've made it once again. It's The Green Room. I am Vilmos, your host. Thank you very much for listening. The Green Room is the anchor podcast at greenroomradio.net, a website that has a whole bunch of other podcasts, all by comedians, all good stuff. Stop in and listen to some of the other stuff. There's The Mentorist, Gino's Picks, The Lost Generation Podcast, all kinds of good stuff. You won't be disappointed. If you are listening to us on a regular basis, do us a favor and let other people know. This is the largest and longest running podcast on stand-up comedy that you will find anywhere. So it's worth passing along. Another show note real quick. If you did not see it when it came down the line, or if you're new to the show, we did a special episode on Ron Schock, who's going through some interesting times right now. And I'm not going to go into it here because this show is about someone else, but you can find out all you want about Ron Schock if you go to greenroomradio.net/Ron Schock, RonSHock, or you can just click on search and type in Ron Schock, and you will find it. It's Ron Schock, an introduction. All right, today's episode is for Dobie Maxwell. Now, I didn't really know Dobie Maxwell personally before last year. I knew who Dobie Maxwell was. He's kind of famous within the comedy business, I guess, our circle of people, because he was escorted off of the Bob and Tom show in the middle of the show. And the weird thing about it is, even he doesn't know why. The only people that know why are the Bob and Tom people, and they've never said anything. That being said, I met Dobie for the first time at the World Series of Comedy, not this last year in 2011, but in 2010. And I found him to be a pretty interesting fella. He's got a great background as far as being a comedian. He's been a comedian a long time. He's also been a radio personality. He's worked in major markets. He's got some options, which a lot of comedy comedians don't. You know, all we have is what we do on stage right now, and we feel like we don't have anything else that we really can do, or maybe it is we lose our desire to do anything else. Now, most of us did something else or were studying to be something else before we got into comedy, but that fades pretty quick. Like, before I got into comedy, I was in banking. I mean, that's what I was actually doing when I started. I don't know if I could be a banker anymore. I also, of course, I owned an internet service and did computer repair and that kind of stuff. And I could easily go back into that if I so chose. But honestly, I'm all in at this point. I don't really want to go back to doing that other stuff. It's not that it's bad work. It's not that I feel it's beneath me. It's just that I would much rather do this. If I can eke out a living doing this, even if it doesn't provide me with any fantastic return, I'm perfectly okay with that. Not that the computer stuff was providing me a fantastic return either. If I wanted to make money, I should have stayed in banking. That would have made me some money. But in any case, we do this, all of us do this, and Dobie does it too, because we love it. And that's kind of part of what this show is about. But also, we talk about how he's got some options, a little bit about his radio and comedy stuff, both of those guys. And You know, and he's, I'm going to admit this, and I found this out kind of after recorded this episode with some things that I really am not in the position to discuss, but take it from me, Dobie has a tendency to be a very polarizing figure. And, you know, it seems to me that people either love him or hate him. And I think only you can decide that. So here he is, Dobie Maxwell. Who was the dude that they... Remember back in the day, the first time I ever saw anything like this, and I would equate it to today's viral video, was that one where they had the TV evangelist that every time he squinted, somebody put fart noises on it?
Oh, I never saw that.
Dude, it is just so damn funny. If you look up somewhere on the... internet, and you type in TV evangelist fart noises. Whoever this dude is, when he's being sincere, like, oh, and the Lord is going to heal you, he closes his eyes and crunches up his face, and somebody puts in a fart sound. And you know what? We should be more intelligent human beings.
No, buddy. Not going to happen.
Oh, and I remember watching that with all people. It was Gary Bynum, and he had a copy of a tape that had probably been like the 10th generation copy of this thing, maybe more. Mm-hmm. And it was just awful quality-wise, but it was just good enough to be able to follow that whole thing along. And whoever did it, it was just absolutely hysterical.
That's great. That sounds funny right there. That's why I think I talked to you last time about my business venture, the King of Uranus.
You didn't talk to me about it. I just knew that was something you were using, and I don't want to say under what auspice, because I don't want to give something away.
No, I'll tell you, you're not giving anything away. If as long as you're here, we're going to hear about it, whether you want to or not.
That's
brother.
Perfect.
I was actually working for Keith Stubbs, a guy I really like a lot in Salt Lake City,
sure.
Utah.
Sure. I saw and, Keith when he back in the day.
One of my favorite people. He's one of the few guys I think that runs a good club and is a good comic. That doesn't happen very often, but I really think he's one of them, in my opinion. Uh-huh. And I have nothing but good things to say about him, and he brings me back. I used to have a radio job there. So basically, whenever I want to, I can go back to Salt Lake. And the budget is what it is, and by the time I fly there from Chicago, I don't necessarily make a lot of money, especially now with gas prices and everything. But I really enjoy working there. I have a lot of friends, so I try to go there. So this is about 4 or 5 years ago. I was in the Baymont Hotel. Keith puts us up in the Baymont. He's got a deal there.
Sure.
And there was some kind of convention in town, and I had the handicap room. It was the last room that was there, and it's the handicap room.
I hate those rooms.
Oh, I hate those rooms, but your toilet's 6 feet off the ground. I don't know whether to, you know, take a dump or get my bangs trimmed, and I'm swinging my legs on the crapper like I'm 6 years old and trying to take a shower with the, you know, the shower head you have to hold in your hand. And
right.
I'm sorry for handicapped people. I know they need that place, but it's just, it was frustrating. And I've been in the business forever, and I'm thinking, what am I doing with my life as I'm getting ready to do this? And I wasn't mad at anybody but myself. And Vilmos, I'm telling you, man, I had a vision. Michael Jackson talked about it. All his hit songs, when he'd be whatever he was, he'd have this vision, and he would stop whatever he was doing, and he would write down the songs, and they were all his biggest hits.
Wow.
And he said, you just know it when it happens. You know this. And I never really had anything like that before. And I'm in the shower, and I'm having this, and I had a vision, man. I know this sounds corny. I know it sounds crazy. I swear to you, it's true. Now, when I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, it's my hometown, there was a place there when I was a kid called the Moon Fun Shop. It was basically a predecessor to Spencer Gifts, okay?
Uh-huh.
And it was Spencer Gifts is more of a head shop now. They sell, you know, marijuana-type stuff. But back then, the Moon Fun Shop, I was probably 12 years old, so they might have sold pot stuff. I wasn't really into that then. But they had, you know, the fake rubber puke turds, everything that farted, whoopee cushions. They had all that kind of stuff. Funny stickers and T-shirts. And it was really a great, really well-run store. There were three of them in Milwaukee. And in probably the mid-80s, the guy that ran the store, there was an article about him in the paper. He said, I'm closing the Moon Fun Shops. I've had my fun. I'm not broke. I'm not out of business. I'm going to go tour Europe for a while and enjoy life. And I thought, man, that's just the coolest thing I've ever heard. You know, you don't picture people closing a business because they want to. It's always because, you know, it's a bad situation. I just always had that. And I don't know why it came to me in a shower in Salt Lake City, Utah, in the handicap room before a show, and I just had this vision saying, you are going to be the King of Uranus. Everything's funny when it comes from Uranus. It's basically a version of the Moon Fun Shop online, and you're going to be a character, and you're going to go on and make commercials and sell funny stuff. There's a new group of 9-year-old boys every year that have not heard of a whoopee cushion or a fake vomit, puke, all those little the fly inside the plastic ice cube, those kind of things. Colonel Sanders didn't invent fried chicken. He put his face on the bucket. And I don't know. It all just came out. I'm sorry for the visual, but I got out of the shower dripping naked, and I got out a notebook, and I started making these notes down, and I probably wrote for a full 45 minutes, and it just kind of came to me. And I had this full picture of what I wanted to be, the king of Uranus. Because you're right, intelligent people, you could go to a Mensa meeting and start doing fart jokes or pass around that video, and people would laugh. I don't know what it is about the human space. You know, it's farts are funny. It just, if somebody falls in front of you, just base humor. And I'm going to claim that, because my comedy, for whatever reason, there are places I can't go just because people, you know, they don't get it. I don't do well in the South. Sometimes people just they stare at me. Everybody loves the king of Uranus. I could go to China. I could go across the world to England. Oh, Uranus is, I don't know why they named that planet, but I'm claiming it as my own. That's my Colonel Sanders bucket. Uranus is my bucket, and I am now the king of Uranus. And I'm putting together a corporation. I've got now about four or five costumes. I'm going to start doing YouTube videos and cranking it out, man. And it's my own. I don't have to get in a car and drive 1,200 miles. The YouTube is now my comedy club, and I feel nothing but positive about it.
Wow. I had no idea that that's what that was all about, you know, because you had mentioned that in passing about an address you use. So I didn't, I thought it was just maybe referring to a joke you did, because I've never had the opportunity to see your act.
Oh, buddy, I think you should.
Oh, of course I would love to, but, you know, I'm never anywhere close. I mean, I would like to come see you in Chicago when you're at Zany's this upcoming weekend, but... because I want to see 4D comedy.
Ha! You got the the press release on that.
Well, you know, I have a I get what they call Google alerts. Do you get those?
Right. I do not, because if my name's on it and somebody trashes me, I just don't want to get upset.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't have them with my name on them. I only have them for, you know, comedy club news.
Oh, okay.
And I have them for comics, and the reason I have them for that is because I just try to – the only reason I do it is so I have some sort of content for the Green Room Radio Facebook page or Twitter stuff.
Gotcha.
It gives me something to talk about, because honestly, I don't have a well to go to. You know,
you don't.
No, I don't feel like I do. I just – especially when it comes to the Green Room stuff, I have ideas, but a lot of them have not come to fruition yet. But anyway, I saw that come through under the Comedy Club alert. And 4D comedy, please explain.
Well, I'm really not at liberty to explain. I don't mean to be that. That's a Zany's deal, and they wanted to kind of drop that little bomb on them. And I'm going to let them explain it, because if I go off on the wrong tangent, I don't want to be the one that's blamed for it.
Well, now you understand that this is going to air long after the 4D comedy experience has gone out.
Okay, well, if that's the case, it's an April Fool's prank.
Ah, wonderful. Well, see, that's a cool insight, because now, folks, we're recording this on a Saturday night. What is it, the 30th of April
30, or March? 31st of
31st
March,
of March. Yeah. But mm-hmm. This won't air until April the 12th, which is the day before your appearance.
So, I gotcha.
So we're completely safe discussing this. So they're doing an April Fool's prank.
Yeah, and they came up with it. I was in radio a lot, and Bert Haas, the general manager of Zany's, and I have been friends for a long time. And he said, I want to come up with a stunt. What do you think? And I said, well, if anybody's going to try to pull this off, I'll be glad. He wants me to come to the club with the King of Uranus clothing on and everything like that. I don't know if we're actually going to pull that off. It's still under debate. But I'm not exactly how it's going to pull it off. But I don't know if it, obviously you heard about it. I wasn't sure if any press people did pick up on it. I haven't gotten any calls.
Well, I don't know. You know, it does. The alert I got had nothing with your. It only had that you were the performer. It didn't have any contact information, and it was actually lumped in with a bunch of other events for that weekend. So, it wasn't something individually on that. But I still think that's pretty cool. Probably the best. What's the best radio prank you've ever heard of?
You know, I'm not a big fan of the radio pranks when they got the two guys burp and fart morning show. They call someone up, hey, your wife's got a tumor. Just kidding.
Right.
The wacky wake-up call. That's, I don't know, nothing that I've really heard of that stands out. That's not necessarily the style I do. Do you have anything in your mind that you heard?
I do, and that's why I asked you, because I'm not a fan of the prank either. I don't like the prank phone calls. Like, I didn't like crank anchors and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I did have an appreciation for this particular prank. Opie and Anthony did it, and it was one of the first things I think that got them really well noticed. Is they said, "All right, the thousand." I think it was like they said the 1,087th caller, some insane number. It wasn't like 100. It was I think it was $1,000 something.
Uh-huh.
We'll get $100,000. And they just kept going on this. And God, I feel bad for the call screener, the poor bastard that's going through their number.
Sure.
And they kept on it. You know, if you are the blah, 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 we're going to give you $100,000. You're going to get $100,000.
Let me guess. Can I jump ahead of you? Is it $100,000 candy bar?
Oh, yeah, it was. That's all it was. It was $100,000.
I've heard that done before. That's like a hack comedy bit.
Well, they may have been the first one to do it. They pride themselves on their originality, and this was long ago. So maybe it was, maybe it wasn't.
Maybe it was.
So, but the thing is you can hear it on the internet somewhere. This guy just loses his shit. Uh-huh. I mean, that poor guy, I think he'd been dialing for 2 hours or something.
Yeah.
And the poor guy just lost his shit. But I at least gave him points for saying exactly what it was and then letting the audience interpret the result.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I liked it. Sorry.
No, there's nothing to be sorry about, man. That's the thing. That's the thing about comedy or entertainment in general. You know, I don't have to like Lady Gaga, and neither do you, but enough people do that make her a rich person. You know, Dane Cook, as far as the comedy, comics trash Dane Cook left and right, but he sells out arenas. And it's a business thing. If you look at it from that point of view, you know, and don't take it personally. Hey, you want to be an artist? That's a different story. Show business. Pick one, show or business.
Well, yeah, and I'm all for, you know, I'm all for Dane Cook, Larry the Cable Guy. I don't care who they are, as long as they're representing comedy well. And we may not appreciate somebody's material, mm-hmm. but as long as he's out there and he's getting people interested in stand-up comedy, I mean, that same guy that might like Larry the Cable Guy may also like me. Or he may like you. So,
have you ever interviewed Larry the Cable Guy? I don't want to be drop his name, his birth name. I mean, I work with him many times.
Well, everybody knows it's Dan Whitney. I don't think that's a big secret.
I guess I've been around pro wrestling too long that you're not supposed to really drop the real name. It's not too cool to that. If as long as you did, yes, Dan Whitney. And I worked, knew him as Dan Whitney, uh-huh. and I always found him to be a very nice fellow.
Yeah,
and just a regular comic, not particularly. And I don't mean any insult to that. Just a regular guy. He's not particularly fantastic or comics. Oh, that Dan Whitney. He was fantastic, but the public bought what he was selling as the character. Hey, good for him. I think he's a very nice guy. I talked to him after he was Larry, and good for him.
Yeah, well, they told me that he worked his ass off on that character. I mean, that came out of Florida. He wanted to he developed that character kind of to do radio on the Ron and Ron show at that time,
That's
which was
true.
Ron Bennington and Ron Diaz. And then he decided to go, I guess, all in on it at some point. But my friends in Omaha, Todd and Tyler, told me that they remember when he first was doing that character and coming out there, that he would do the show on Friday mornings.
Yeah.
And on every break, he would go out of the studio and do nothing but hit the phones with all the other stations that he did call-ins with. And he worked his ass off on that thing. That guy had no peace on a Friday. He wrote all the way. I guess he wrote his bits during the week, had them all ready to go. And what he did was I don't know what the numbers are, but let's just use the number 50. All right. He got himself up to 50 stations to let him call in free. And he used that as a way to, develop a fan following in individual towns. And then once that 50 was strong, then he started charging guys, is the story I was told. Not a lot, but, and then he dropped off like whatever, some of them, because they didn't want to pay. But then he got more people that wanted to pay. And then pretty soon he made it into a cottage industry. So he's a guy that earned everything he's got, as far as I'm concerned.
I couldn't agree more. I have nothing but respect for him. And I like him as a person, too. I'm not buddies with him, but I know him good. A lot of comics trash him, I think, unjustly, in my opinion. They look at him as, oh, it's Larry the Cable Guy. Yeah, you should be so lucky to be a Larry the Cable Guy.
Dude, he's got writers to write that material. They say that material's so easy and all that other stuff, but
no.
There's some guys up in... There's a comic in Denver that wrote for him for 5 or 6 years. And, he actually just, I was told because of this particular comic that he's switching up some of his writing staff. And this guy ended up being one of the guys who got switched out. And he in his own right is a great comic and a good writer and a good performer. But I think Larry was wanting to, whatever, change up something. So it's, even Ron White does that. Kid Dave Miller, who's started out with Ron, who used to open for him until Alex Raimondo got the gig. They would all go down somewhere. Ron would bring them all down somewhere, and they'd have a big writing party once or twice a year where they'd work on material for him. So, look, anybody that represents comedy well, I don't care who they are. I just don't want to see a guy out there that's misrepresenting stand-up. And, you know, I'm not going to get into anybody that I actually, you know, going to name a name. But, you know, somebody that's stealing material and that kind of stuff, I don't feel that represents comedy well. Because if everybody knows you're doing somebody else's bit and it seems to be acceptable, I think that takes something away from what we as comedians do to get our act to where it is.
I will say, though, from any other kind of entertainment I've been around, especially radio, that radio thrives on stealing of material. They condone it. They were surprised that I didn't want to do that. I said, part of the fun is writing my own bits. I mean, they wanted me to just, you know, well, this guy in Seattle does this, and this guy in Miami does that. Why don't you just, you know, put that together? It's like, well, no, that takes the fun out of it for the comic mindset. And unfortunately, from a pure artist point of view, that's really good and noble. But in the real world, it's unfortunately not feasible. I don't condone stealing material either, but unfortunately an audience does not care, and most bookers don't care. They really don't.
No, you're right about that. I mean, they will allow a guy to come in, and well, the only guy I've heard of that's ever fired somebody for it was Gary Bynum. Gary Bynum had a guy that came down, was working Tucson, and I'm pretty sure this dude was lifting bits off of Chris Rock, I mean verbatim.
Right.
He came off stage, and Bynum walked up to him, and I could be wrong about the Chris Rock, could have been another comic, but he said, look, you're out of here. You're done. And the guy goes, why? He goes, I can hear Chris Rock on CD anytime I want.
Mm-hmm.
And got rid of him. So, I think that there are some guys out there for the most part, but I definitely think it's hit and miss.
Oh, it's totally hit and miss. And like anything else, how many guys are playing guitars in bar bands, and some guys are hacks there, and some guys write original songs, and the whole artist package, there's a lot that goes with that. I think the average comedy club that's in a strip mall somewhere across America, you can't expect to get an artist every week. You know, and the people that come out that win tickets, that they put their business card in a fishbowl and won a free comedy night out with 5,000 of your nearest friends. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's controlled art. It's cut out. It's cookie cutter, man.
Well, that's one of the things that's ruined comedy. The free pass is ruining stand-up comedy.
Well, it's ruined it before. I guess I've been around a lot longer than you in the comedy business per se. I've seen this 20 years ago. Then it weeded out, and I see a whole new generation of both comics and club owners going through it again, along with bringer shows. You know, that's another thing. It's like, oh, if you want to perform at an open mic night, you got to bring 15 people. They can open up the felony ward at the insane asylum and let them out. But if they buy two drinks, they can come to a comedy show. And how does that build any kind of artistic? You think those people know? He's stealing material. They're just there because they're for drinks. They don't even know what comedy is.
Right, and they don't care. Because it was free.
No. Yeah.
You devalue what you're seeing. I mean, if you could go see, if you could have gone and saw the Rolling Stones for free whenever they came into Chicago and played at the stadium, how many people would show up the third time?
That's a good question.
You know, I just don't think it would be very many. Now, I do want to talk. I told you before, I read your blog, right?
Well, thank you. You're the one. I appreciate it.
I think it's more than me. As a matter of fact, I know one of my Canadian listeners, Craig Sherburn, is a big fan of your blog.
Thank you, Craig. I do appreciate that, buddy. And everything I say, I try to be honest and to the hip and from the heart. And sometimes it doesn't go over that well and people don't take it the way I mean it. And sometimes I mean to be an asshole, too. So,
well, the reason that I bring it up is because your last blog entry made me feel like you were at a crossroads. And when I say last blog entry, folks, that would have to be March the 30th, right?
Read March the 31st when I talk about almost getting physically assaulted in Berwyn, Illinois at a gig. That's the one right after the one you're referring to, but go right ahead.
Continue. Yeah, well, it seems to me that you've had success in radio and you've had success in comedy. And you feel like you're at a crossroads. Mm-hmm. And I too would love, I mean, that's why I do this podcast, honestly, is partly I love comedy, but I would love to be on the radio, right? So you actually have the chance to probably make that happen. I think realistically, I do not. I wouldn't know how to go about it, you know. And
I totally think you could, and here's why. Because radio, I've been around it kind of by accident for over 20 years, more than 20 years now. Uh-huh. And you used to need a license, believe it or not, like a driver's license, a third-class radio telephone broadcast license, which I still have a copy of, which with the government. It's just a nominal fee, you know, a few dollars, and you get this license. And there used to be some kind of screening process. They don't just let any idiot sit behind a mic, which they totally do now. All the regulations have been down, and pretty much if you knew somebody and you really put together some kind of a package and some kind of a tape and said, hey, I'm Vilmos, I want to try radio, and you'd say, you know, pretty soon you would get a job. It might not be high paying, it might not be full time, it might not be in a big market, but if you pursued it long enough, you would get a job in radio. I can guarantee you that. I should start a broadcasting school, because basically at some point stations need people to show up. So a minimum wage person that will show up at 3 o'clock in the morning to play, you know, a recorded and go on once an hour. Hey, here's the weather. You know, you're on the air for 30 seconds at 2 o'clock in the morning in Butt Plug, Alabama, and three people are listening, but you're in radio.
Right. Well, I was thinking more Steve Dahl or Larry Lujack or Jonathan Brandmeier. You know, that my vision's more of that.
Right. I'm just being the realistic version, if you want. Yeah, right. But to get to that point, you're doing it right now. Whereas 10 years ago, what's a podcast? What's a blog? What's any of this kind of stuff? Now, schmucks like us can go on there and do anything we want to. I'm sure you have listeners. You have a listener in Canada. Thank goodness for that. You know, I mean, you do a great job with this, and you're in a good place. I think you're not giving yourself enough credit, man.
Well, thank you very much. And you know what? I'll ask you this question then as a follow-up is, do you think podcasting is the future of radio?
I do totally think it's the future of radio, because I'm doing one myself with an ex-club owner named Jeff Schneider out of Pittsburgh, right. Who all the comics have been around a long time thought that, you know, he was the funniest club owner. And he's a well-read guy, and he knows a lot about a lot of subjects. And he's polarizing just like I'm polarizing. People love me or hate me. There's usually no in-between. And that's just always been since I was even a little kid.
Yeah.
And Jeff's the same way. I've known him for going on 30 years now. When he ran the club in Milwaukee when I started, we would have these conversations, and some people would get it and some people wouldn't. He's on a podcast now. We're starting to get some followers. It's called The Unshow. I'm not trying to plug another podcast.
I totally want you to.
And I'd even run it on your network if you wanted to, on the Green Room Network. But the point is, it's two guys that I think, it's not just guys, hey, boy, that Kim Kardashian's got a big ass, like hacks and radio do all the time.
Yeah.
Jeff gets pretty deep. I've known him for a long time, and I feel like I have a good rapport with you. I'm sure you've got rapport with other comedians. I think it's going to take away and chip away. Now, comedy fans will find the Green Room podcast, and I'm sure I'll get people that will be my fans all over the country that have never heard of me anywhere else but your podcast. And I thank you for that. If I get 100 people here and 100 people in another one, then that's how you build your fan base. Lenny Bruce talked about he wanted 100,000 people that dug what he did. He said, the rest of the world can kiss my ass. I want 100,000 people, and I'll travel around the country making them laugh, and I'll have a wonderful life and a wonderful living. And that was probably in the 1950s when he said that. Now, schmucks like us can do that. It's not that hard to get 100,000 people if you really focused on it.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to figure out my way through it. And even though I'm going to be heading into what? I started April of 2008. I'm very close to 4 years.
And so you probably got a nice backlog of some very interesting content and some pretty big names too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. And some content I just deleted.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. Inside joke, folks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we recorded another one. I was a little bit salty, and we talked about some things I would rather not
get out. I didn't
want to
say that.
No, I'm not. I don't. But I'll talk about anything, Vilmos. I will. I'm not ashamed to talk. But the thing about it is, it's just that was just something. I'm a controversial. It was in some circles. I piss off the wrong people, bookers. For every 100 people that think I'm great, there's one person that thinks I'm a flaming satanic prick, and they usually have some power. And I just don't want to. I don't want to pour any more gas on those fires.
I get it, and he didn't do anything that bad, folks. It had to do with my ability to edit. So, listen, let me ask you this question. Do you think that you're at this crossroads? Are you gonna, you said before, you told me that you try to chase both, you know, and you didn't catch each one. And now that you feel like you're at this fork in the road, are you going with that strategy again, or are you gonna just go one path or another?
Well, I think I have to survive. Everybody has to survive. It's a completely different game, a completely different world for everybody, not just entertainers. And I have totally lost the desire to need to travel around the country. I'm so glad I did it in my 20s and 30s and saw all four corners of America when it was still somewhat of a great country. And, you know, yeah, I see something on TV like the St. Louis Arch or the Statue of Liberty or the Mount Rushmore. And I said, I've been there. I've been up in that. I've seen that. Rather than these guys that work in some job until they're in their 60s and getting a Winnebago with some prune wife they haven't had sex with in 30 years and argue the whole way across the country. No, that's not the way I want to do it. I did it when I was young. I ate great food. I saw great sights. Now, I want whatever stability is, I want that. You know, I'm trying to narrow myself down to Chicago, Illinois, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, which is my hometown, Madison, Wisconsin, which is a pretty hip college town if you've never been there, yeah. and Rockford, Illinois. That little postage stamp. I live basically in Fox Lake, Illinois, which is not too far from the midpoint of those four cities. I call that the squared circle of Uranus. There's about 15 million people in those four towns.
Is that right?
Yeah, well, maybe 12 to 15, depending on who you talk to.
Wow.
But there's everything that I can think of there. There's a huge city in Chicago. There's a big city in Milwaukee. There's a capital city in Madison. There's a medium-sized industrial town in Rockford. I also have some radio connections there. And you have a small of rural towns in between and little places. So I'm thinking between those four cities, if I can't squeeze out a living, I don't need to go on the road and work the Yoder circuits of the world because now he's passed his business down. He was not a people person, so he's got Uday and Kusei, his two social retard sons, that are firing everybody that are over 30. And this, you can totally let this rip because it's true. Am I the grisly old fart that I never would have thought I'd be? Yes, but guys that are good comics that helped build his father's business, now the kids are firing him left and right because they want to have their drinking buddies in there. And it's pissing people off. I'm thinking, I see the writing on the wall. Comedy when I was in 20s and 30s, the world was different. There was no YouTube. There was no Facebook. There was no things that you could do in the comfort of your own home. Comedy was an event and a destination, especially in the smaller towns. Now, people still do come out in the smaller towns, but I don't want to have some 25-year-old Nimrod running my destiny through his fingers and blowing me off if I say the wrong thing in a blog.
Yeah.
You know, just I guess I've lost my trust, and my skin is about as thick as a watermelon rind. You know, and I don't get offended when people shoot bullets at me, but there's a lot of thin-skinned people, and I tend to tell things the way they are, and I know you're that way too. And people don't take it well; they don't suffer that well.
Yeah, that's true. I'm banned in all of Colorado. There's not a club in Colorado that I can work in, and it's all political, and yep. It all has to do with when I was involved with Wits End Comedy Club.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, Look, I've always thought that the political end of it, or the whatever you want to call it, the networking end of it, was just utter shit. But that's just a part of the entertainment business, no matter what area of it you're in.
Yeah.
Right? Even actors, right? Actors, all that stuff.
So. I find it to be in radio, too, and I was around pro wrestling. It's in pro wrestling as well. And the farther down the bottom you are, the more that exists. The higher up that you get, there's more respect. And really, you know, they also that the whole adage, the bigger they are, the nicer they are. I really think that's true because they had to go through that at some time, maybe not as long or as much as a lot of the other people did. But a lot of times, you know, talent, if you get to the point where the fans come out to see you, we're not going to see a comedy show. We're going to see Vilmos or Dobie. You have a whole different drawing power in a whole different world. And you can choose to be an asshole. But I'm thinking that's what I'm going for, to please Dave Stroop or these people that have this power that is bestowed upon them. I'm not going to – if you want to book me, you know what I do. You've seen me before. You can choose not to book me because you don't like my blog. But – I'm not going to kiss your ass. Yes, I'm another Caucasian comedian like the other 5,000 between 20 and 60 that are out there trying to get work. But there's only one king of Uranus, and no one has that vision but me. And now I have YouTube as a worldwide stage. I don't need to run to your little gig in the UP of Michigan for $100 when gas is going to cost me $150. Now I can go around you, you pinheaded little squirrel, and you can crawl back in your hole, and I can have the true freedom of putting my stuff out there and letting the people decide if they like it or not. And if they don't, I am ballsy enough to go sell shoes or make Wendy's hamburgers or drive a cab. You know what I'm saying? And that takes balls to put yourself out on the line like that and to have faith in yourself. It would be nice if you had the support of the John Yoders and the Dave Stroops and the so many others. I look at a guy like Tom Sobel, who I find to be a total gentleman. He totally cares about the comedian still to this day. Every time I deal with Tom Sobel, I've had nothing but positive I've never had a cross word with the guy. He's always been in good communication. When there has been any kind of a problem with the club, he goes to fight for the comedian and not for the club, where it's totally unlike I've seen with a lot of other bookers. And again, I'm not here to trash people, but if young comics listen to this, I want you to know that you're not the only one getting shit on by the business. You're not the only one that got in your car when you got the call at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and you have to make a 7-hour drive in a blizzard to butt plug North Dakota to do a gig for 17 drunks and you don't get paid back ever. That's, you're not the only one that's happened to. And I have to know that I'm not the only one that that's happened to. These people aren't, they are social misfits, man. They should be selling tires. They're not human. They have different goals. They don't want comedy. Is not their main. They want to sell beer. They want to make a commission. Go to any booker's house. Usually looks like Graceland. There's usually a pool. There's usually in the nicest part of town. Comics are living in couches and basements like spiders. Driving, they're the pimps, we're the whores. And I'm sorry, that's the truth. And if nobody wants to book me because of that, I will gladly drive a truck and have a dignified life and sleep and not have a clear conscience. There. Now, is that controversial enough for you? I hope that that's gonna blow the dust out of some speakers, and I'm not ashamed to say that. And if I gotta go down for speaking the truth, then I'm going down for speaking the truth.
Well, I actually wasn't looking for controversial.
Oh, okay. Well, you got it. So you can edit that out if you want to. Now you got
it. No. I think it's a real representation of how a lot of us feel. I mean, I feel like that. I lived under what I would call a dictatorship of sorts when I was involved with Wits End, because there was this thing about the guy that owned the place had this thing about language, and he actually beat it into me that he thought I was extremely blue. And I never believed I was extremely blue, but I allowed my mind to catch on to that particular, you know, part of what he constantly was harping on me about.
Sure.
And it stuck with me to the point where when I finally got out from under all that stuff, I felt like it was creating problems for me. You know, when you have somebody in a position of authority over you, whether you choose to give them the authority or whether they just have it, you know, and in this case, a booker, we choose to give them a certain amount of authority over us because we ask them for work. And when you allow them to, that kind of bad attitude stuff by them saying, well, listen, I don't like this about you, or I don't like that about you, or whatever it is that happens, you get to feeling beat down. And pretty soon you get to a point where you really start doubting yourself, or you start doubting your ability to actually get to where it is you originally wanted to go.
Go ahead.
Keep going.
No, you're on a roll. Keep going.
Well, no, I just feel like that's one of the really hard things it is for comics to not fall into, because as a part of who we are and as a part of the name of your blog, you know, the Dented Can Diary, you've said it very well that, you know, as comics, we're all dented cans. There's always something that's inside of us that's a little bit of a flaw. And it seems like no matter where this stuff comes from, a booker, a club, an audience member. I mean, how many of us have had something on YouTube or something like your blogs where you get 55 compliments and one negative thing, and that's the only thing you focus on because it filters down to that particular thing. And we can't, because of who we are and what it makes us what we are so that we can do comedy, it's also our biggest downfall.
Amen. I could not agree more. And I think that the whole dented can aspect, I think I've learned in my life to buddy up with the strays, especially in the comedy world. A lot of times I'll cross paths with comics that are like, you know, I don't hang around a lot of comics, but I hang out with you because you're a real guy. And I try to be a good person way more than that. I know how hard it is. I try to, whatever anyone's religious beliefs are, I truly believe the golden rule is the most brilliant thing that's ever been created in the universe. Treat others like you would be treated. You know what I'm saying? Accept them for people for who they are. I really try to do that. And sometimes when I have these clashes with people, you know, people that don't know me say, boy, I heard you were this evil ogre and this complete flaming maniac prick, and now I've met you all these years later, you're one of the nicest guys I've ever met. It's like, you know, it's a reputation precedes you, and I've never been good at that. You know, perception is reality. It doesn't matter if I'm right. You know, I'll rant and rave, and yes, I'm right, but then in the end of the day, you don't get booked in 20 rooms that somebody has. Well, who's right or wrong? You know, it's business, and sometimes I have a hard time, I think a lot of other guys do too, a hard time keeping your personal life out of this business, because you give up so much, man. You give up so much. You're in your car, and you're driving for 18 hours to through blizzards and bad weather and check engine lights, and you're sleeping in some bug-infested shithole next to some masturbating lunatic who you have no idea if he's got a felony record or not, and then you got to go share a room and live with this guy for a week and try to get laughs at a club just so some pinhead 100 miles away will book you again 6 months later. That's insane. How badly did our parents neglect us that we need to do this to get this attention, man? Holy Christmas, this is out of control.
Yeah, but yet, you know, it is something that we have a passion to do. And it's funny you talk about, you know, the choices that we make and, you know, how you can actually make a decision and whatever it is, whether you're venting or you're arguing with a booker, or, you know, contradicting them, and you know that it's going to create the problem. It feeds right into one of my favorite sayings, and I actually think this whenever it happens, is uh-huh. This the hill I want to die on?
Ha! Good is, one. I'm gonna steal that but give you credit for it. I like that.
Dude, it's true. I mean, I'll basically, when I get into an argument with somebody, if you and I were going to have an argument about anything.
I hope we don't, buddy.
Well, I hope we don't either, but I'm just...
I don't intend on it.
well, me neither, but I'm just saying, let's say if we're gonna have an argument, the first thing in my mind, honest to God, is this the hill I want to die on? Am I willing to put my relationship with Dobie Maxwell on the line for this particular argument? Now, granted, that's a long way to go for who gets the mustard first, but I'm still going to think about it as I go through my life. And what I've done is it's caused me a lot of times to eat some shit that I didn't want to. But on the other hand, a lot of times I've said, yeah, you know what? This one's worth it. And that's why I'm banned in most of Colorado, right? All of Colorado.
And you think about this too, is Colorado the epicenter of the comedy universe or the universe in general? I mean, you're not technically from there. You might have lived there for a while. I mean, no disrespect to Colorado or anybody in it. But there's no one person, including Jay Leno or David Letterman, in the comedy business per se, Bud Friedman, name any big name that you want to, that could be angry with you, that would stop you. If you can go around anybody. And I pissed off more than one person. Bob and Tom aren't sending me any Christmas cards anytime soon. Yeah. You know, Dave Stroop books a lot of rooms in the Midwest, and I happen to live in the Midwest. Would I like working for him? Yes, I would. He told me flat out, I don't think it was a personal thing, I have no interest in ever booking you again, from a blog that I wrote about another guy, Paul Lane, if you want to get into that whole thing. You know, Paul Lane was the Iowa guy. Apparently, I'm this pariah now because I wrote something about in a blog about Paul Lane, who I didn't necessarily get along with him. I didn't hate him. I didn't have a huge argument. I thought he was one of those guys that made comics jump through hoops. I chose not to do that. Then he passed away, and I wrote that there's going to be comics lining up to try to get in there now, and I'm sorry it happened. I basically poked fun at myself more than him, but the perception was that I kicked a dead man when he was down, and people would go, well, I heard about what you wrote about Paul Lane. Well, did you actually read it? Oh, well, no, I didn't have to. I heard it. Well, it's like The Last Temptation of the Christ, that movie. The people that picketed, most of them didn't actually see the actual movie. And I'm not defending myself. And if I'm wrong, I will admit it loud and in clear and in dark letters in ink that I screwed up. But I look at that and say, boy, you know, I was just basically explaining how it was. I have nothing against Paul Lane. I'm sorry he died at an early age. I really am. But it was from a politics comedy point of view that I chose not to jump through his hoops. That's all I was saying. And it was nothing malicious meant at all, but that's how it was taken. So my point is, you drop all these names, have nothing against Bob and Tom or Dave Stroop. I don't hate anybody, man. Life is hard enough. As I get older, you know, that the dream fades that you're going to be the young buck and banging Playboy bunnies and driving limousines, and you got all your Tonight shows up to the belt. And it's like, well, who's truly happy? Look at the people that have gotten that. A guy like Dave Chappelle, as far as comedy wise goes, or Richard Jenny, they've hit it pretty high in my book of how high comedy, you know, the specials. And they weren't very happy, were they?
No.
Happiness comes from within. And if I can be the king of Uranus and make 9-year-old kids laugh with fart jokes at flea markets or do my own YouTube videos and have a normal life living in Chicago and Milwaukee and places that I really enjoy, I'm okay with that. I don't wish Dave Stroop anything bad, and if I never work his rooms again, I will survive. And you know what? He will survive too. So there's going to be no bitter feelings coming to Bob and Tom. They're running 200 markets. Well, there's a lot more radio than 200 markets. You know what I'm saying? And there's a lot more stations and a lot more places. I think that's the whole Zen, Buddhist, whatever you want to call it, in life. And I try to tell my comedy students, too. I said, you know, everybody wants that whole thing. Well, this other person that's in my town or that started out when I did, they got in with a certain club or they got a TV shot or they got a cruise ship run that I didn't get. And you spend so much time worrying about what everybody else gets. Try to worry about what makes you happy. I know that sounds corny and Tony Robbins, but man, as I get older, I really, really believe it and live it, and I'm okay with it. If I'm the pariah that dented can, that's okay. At least I'm honest.
Well, you write your feelings in there. And in all fairness, I read that blog you're talking about, and I didn't feel like you said anything all that bad. I mean, you went along the lines of the same thing that we all talk about from time to time. When somebody passes away, if it's a comic, the first thing you see on any of the comics boards, there's a road comics board out there. You know, somebody always throws out the old joke, hey, where was he booked next week?
Yeah.
You know, it's all it is gallows humor. It's not meant with disrespect. It's just one of those things that people do in order to alleviate some of the strain of realizing our mortality when somebody that you actually knew died. That's really all it is. And that's all you were doing. I didn't see anything in there. I mean, you weren't talking bad or any of that stuff. So, but people are sensitive, you're right, and there's nothing you can do about that. And that's the other thing. You can take the hit as you were talking about for something you never did. I got mixed up with the other comic at Joker's in Oklahoma City and never went back to there again because the other comic I worked with was a total asshole. Mm-hmm. And somehow or another, they got our names mixed up. How they did that, I have no idea, but I never went back.
Not a lot of Vilmos is in the world. I don't mean any disrespect for that. That's a pretty unique name, so if they could have confused it with who.
Dude, I had no idea. It was a venue that Doug McGraw happened to book. And Doug, I called up Doug and I said, hey, man, I'd like to go back to Omaha. It was Joker's or Oklahoma City. It was Joker's in Oklahoma City. And I said, hey, man, I'd like to go back. He goes, they won't have you back. And I go, why? He said, they said you were too difficult to deal with, that you were giving a hard time about their food and all this other stuff. And I go, and Doug knew me. I'd been working with Doug as a comic. That was when he was still doing a lot of stand-up comedy work. And I had done a lot of work with him, and he knew me real well. And I said, you know I didn't do that, right? He goes, yeah, I know, as the other guy. He said, but I could not convince them of that.
Ha!
You know, so what are you going to do? That's just the way it goes. Sometimes you got to take a hit. And I actually don't worry about it because I figure, like you, there are other places. There are other ways. I mean, really, in these days, you're talking about your King of Uranus plan. The truth is you could go out and self-produce your own shows now, which was something that never could have happened before. Or it could have, but it was not very practical.
No, I think Doug Stanhope, to his credit, really, really took that to a new level and did it really well, really early in the game. You know, his whole unbookables concept. And I always liked Doug as a person. I always thought he was really got along with him very, very well. And I respect a guy for doing that. And I think we all have to be more entrepreneurial now than ever before. It used to be, I guess, spoiled coming up to the comedy boom years where all you had to be was a comic. And a lot of these bookers, you know, maybe I got spoiled where you get the people at the punchlines and the Funny Bones and the Tom Sobels and the John Yoders of the world all had, you know, 10, 15, 20 rooms where you make a couple of calls. That's your whole year, man. And you're just basically showing up and doing comedy and not really working on your other skills of self-promotion. And now we have to do more of that, more of our own advertising. And it's a business.
Yeah, it is. It's a business sometimes I don't want to be in, but it's only because I don't like the business end of it. If somehow or another I could find somebody to be a great manager for me, I'd be happily oblivious to all that other shit.
That's another thing, too. I was really thinking, I've had some people approach me and say, why don't you, you know, since you've pissed off every booker in the free world, why don't you be a manager of comics? And I think, you know, I would like to do that from a career shaping point of view. Uh-huh. There's a couple of guys I really think are just absolutely hilarious. Don Reese out of Iowa and
fantastic.
Dwight York.
Fantastic. Dwight too.
Dwight's my favorite. Another guy out of Milwaukee, my hometown, the name is Dan Still. I don't know if you know Dan.
I haven't. He's the one I don't know of those three.
Wonderful guy. And I want to put something together called the Pirates of Comedy. and they're just, you know, pretty, they're dark humor, wonderfully nice guys. And I don't know if I would be on that show other than maybe an MC, but I like to book them in venues. I had a cousin that passed away several years ago that owned comic book shops in Milwaukee. He was the largest comic book dealer in Milwaukee. And I think going through comic book shops and promoting a comedy show that way would be just a great way to promote it, you know, something that you'd never do before. It wouldn't be necessarily for the mainstream, but the guys are a little bit on the dark side, like dark chocolate, but people like dark chocolate. And they're funny and intelligent. And a lot of times those comic book people are pretty introverted, but very dark and intelligent, and they like it. I think they would love these guys. I would be, if you told me, you're going to make $100,000 next year promoting the Pirates of Comedy. I was with a guy named James Wesley Jackson out of Chicago. He used to open for the group Funkadelic, George Clinton. I'm a huge George Clinton fan for a funky white boy. Why I am, I don't know. But I just produced a DVD for him. And a lot of the Funkadelic fans from the 70s and 80s, they know who James is. And I got one of the people in the band to endorse it. I have the artwork done by a guy named Pedro Bell, who did the Funkadelic. He did my CDs, two CDs, and he did James Wesley Jackson. So I'm putting together projects like this to try to go. And James is a little bit older now, so an older black audience doesn't have that many comedians that they can go and see. So I'm saying, if I have to promote shows with the Pirates of Dwight and Dan and Don and a guy like James Wesley Jackson, and I stay home and I can just make a living, I'm totally okay with that, man. I don't have to kiss the ass of bookers. I'm sick of comedy condos. Laughs. I love coming to clubs like Laughs. If I could get 12 of those a year, when I could come to, you know, 1 week a month, really enjoy it. It's a great time to come to Tucson. I have a lot of people and friends in Tucson from radio days. We're gonna have a blast that weekend. I'm gonna tear the roof off. You're gonna say, "Wow, how come I haven't heard of you before?" Because I've got a big mouth and I piss off a lot of the bookers. You know, it's how it is. Gary Bynum has been nothing but professional to me. I like working with him. I don't know what anybody says. I've heard some things. Like any booker, you know, people, they could talk about Christ. You know, oh yeah, he didn't pass me a free fish and wine. And, you know, they get mad at him. Gary has been nothing but professional with me. We've had clear communication. I had diabetes diagnosis last year. I had to cancel. I felt bad about it. He was great. He didn't ban me from it. He said, "We'll do it again. This is the time we do it again." I owe him one. I owe Tucson one. I owe you one. I will be working harder than an ugly stripper when I get to Tucson this week.
Well, Dobie's an interesting guy, and I have no doubt that whatever it is he chooses to do, he's going to be a great success. He has kind of this thing going on. He calls himself Mr. Lucky because he's really hasn't had a lot of luck. And that doesn't make him a bad guy or anything. And don't feel sorry for him because he doesn't feel sorry for him either. There's a couple of really good resources out there about him that I would recommend to you. First of all, you can go to his website, dobiemaxwell.com. It's dobiemaxwell.com. There's links to everything there. I would set you to that spot, and I would set you to Dobie Maxwell's Dented Can Diary. Now, Dobie's been doing this blog for, I think, about 3 or 4 years. And the thing about it is he does it every day, and he makes it interesting every day. I'm a loyal reader of the blog. I will admit that I do read the blog on a regular basis. So I would suggest that you give it a look, too. If you want to see the insight and get a little inside view of the life of a guy that's really trying to make it, this diary would do it for you. It's Dobie Maxwell's Dented Can Diary, dobiemaxwell.blogspot.com. And the last one is every Sunday night, he does a show on KLPX in Kenosha, which is called The Mothership Connection. And think of it as, are you familiar with a guy named Art Bell? Think of it as kind of Art Bell on steroids. He kind of brings all those kind of people on. He looks at it through a... He looks at it through a comedian's eye, and he makes it all very interesting. He's got a great crew. It's, I'm telling you, it's going to be fantastic. What I'll do is I will also put up a link to that as well. I don't have it right in front of me, and it's a little hard to find as far as online. But I will get a link. All these will be linked up on his page at greenroomradio.net. And you guys in Tucson can really luck out this week Go see him. He's going to be at Laughs April 13th and 14th. That's Friday and Saturday. Shows at 8 and 10:30. You can get your tickets online at laughstucson.com. Or, if you're old-fashioned, like I always tell you, pick up the phone and call them. It's 520-323-8669. But do not miss the show, because Dobie will bring everything he's got to the stage. And I can promise you that. And as always, folks, thank you very much for listening. Pass this show along to your friends if you can. Rate us on iTunes if you can. All of those things are very helpful. Like us on Facebook. I don't care. Please just show us a little love. Yeah, but if you really want to do something for me beyond that, or if you're not able to do that, or you've already done that, do me a favor and support what this podcast is all about. Stand-up comedy. See it live. That is the way it is supposed to be done. If you cannot make it to see Dobie this weekend, go to a comedy club near you. Thanks for listening.